Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Batter up. This is one of my favorite rap stars. I used to tell Dave Miller, hip-hop, I know a lot about the hip, but not about the hop. Nelly, he knows a lot about the hop and the hip. St. Louis, he's so proud of where he's from. He also makes it seem easy. I have no idea what he's saying. I don't even know what EI means. What does EI mean? It has a whole song called EI. Education and instruction? Is that what he's talking about? I doubt it. Although he's educating me. Speaking of hip-hop, let's go to Michael J. in Huntington Beach. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help? And I apologize making you wait so long. Weeks you've been calling, but it's always been something else happened. So thanks so much, Michael, for hanging in there.
All right, thank you. Two quick questions. I had hip replacement 5 years ago, and I feel really perfect.
Good.
But is it okay to do pop-ups at home? Because I'm having trouble jumping up in the water. Also, is it inevitable that I might have to have the other one done someday?
There's a very strong chance. I see so many people. I've done one shoulder. I got to now do the other one. I've done one hip. Now I got to do the other one. I've done one knee. I got to do the other one. Is it an automatic? Absolutely not. What's the percentage? You know what? I hate statistics. Because if you're the one, it's 100% for you. But the numbers are there. If you've got it in one side, a few years later, you'll probably need it for the other one. As far as popping up, I didn't do your surgery, so I can't really speak about whether you can pop up or not. But I got a lot of guys in the ocean surfing just fine, thank you very much, who usually about 3 months after the surgery, I get them back in the ocean surfing. So yeah. My patients do. Will you? I don't know. God forbid it's not right and it pops out. You know, don't yell at me. I didn't do your surgery.
Yeah, because my son, he's surfed, like pro surfer and everything, and I wanna do the burp ups or whatever they're called, but I have such a decent life physically, I don't wanna hurt it worse.
Then don't. You know what? A lot of life is psychological and it's not all physical. If your gut feeling is telling you I'm doing just fine, I don't wanna mess it up, Michael J, you've got my endorsement to leave yourself alone. You know what I mean? Use a little common sense. If something deep inside is telling you I don't need to be doing this, you don't have to prove anything to anybody. How old are you?
I don't tell people because I'm a kid inside.
I know, but chronologically, how old are you?
I'm after 55.
Well, at 55, you've seen enough of life. You don't have to prove anything to anybody. You know what? Enjoy the years you got left.
No, but I'm really hard on myself because I love surfing. It's been my whole life. I grew up in Hawaii and Huntington Beach, and I still, like, if you could push me into a wave standing up, I could blow your mind, but it's the getting up. I couldn't believe how hard it was the last
then, okay.
Time.
Listen, remember O'Neill from O'Neill Wetsuits? I remember him being interviewed once. He had a house right on top of Pleasure Point. The guy had a patch on his eye, which was the greatest thing. That's what their symbol is. But he's the greatest, Jack O'Neill. And they interviewed him. He was like in his 80s. And they said, do you surf anymore? He said, no. But I sit in this chair and I look at Pleasure Point from this beautiful house I built. He says, and I surf in my mind. I watch the waves and I surf in my mind. I remember reading that going, what a beautiful way to keep doing what you love, even though you don't have to do it. You get the same feeling. You know, are your parents still alive?
No.
Both my parents are gone. You know what happens once in a while? I have a dream. I have a dream and I'm with my father or I'm with my mother. They died 15 years ago. But in this dream, I'm hanging out with my dad and my mom. And they're not sick. They're vibrant. They're alive. You know what happens, Michael, when I wake up in the morning after having that dream? I feel so terrific because I feel like I was with my parents last night. Now, they're dead. It was a dream. But to my body, to my mind, it was as though they were alive. What do I care that they're dead now? It was as though I was with them, and that's how I still feel as good as if I really was with them. So you know what? Surf with your mind's eye, then you don't have to prove anything, okay?
Yeah, I just, it's been my whole life.
I get it. Listen, I'm a surfer. I know exactly. What do they say? Only a surfer knows the feeling. I know what it's like. Listen, there's no greater metaphor for life than surfing. You know why, Michael? The nose of the board is your future. The tail of the board is your past. The surfer stands in the middle and learns to live in the moment. That's why I love surfing. And thanks so much for calling. All right. I think I'll keep taking some calls then. We'll do the sound bites after. All right. Let's go to Jeannie in where?
Hello.
Jeannie, where are you calling from?
Hollywood Hills.
Oh, I don't know what that what it says there. What do you do for a living, Jeannie?
I'm an actress.
Wow. What was the TV show or movie that Cupid shot you in the heart and says, I want to be an actress?
Oh, I think it happened when I was very young. I was cast in a musical, and I really couldn't sing. But I loved the costumes and the attention that the audience gave me.
Isn't that great? Did you grow up out here?
No.
Really? And how young are you?
I'm old enough to vote, and being an actress, I'm not going to give my age for sure.
All right. I'm going to respect that. Tell me what's the matter. How can I help you?
Well, you know, I have what is called a trigger thumb. I've heard of trigger fingers, but never trigger thumb.
It's much worse of a problem when it's in your thumb than in the other fingers. You know why? Because in your thumb, to flex your thumb, there's not just a cable. There's not just a fishing line. You know, if your thumb is the fishing rod, the bones are the stiff fishing rod. The fishing line is the tendon. And those loops that keep the fishing line close to the fishing rod that gives you the mechanical stability. You can't pull in a 50-pound fish with just a stick or a string, but when you marry the two together with the fishing line and the loops keeping it next to it, then you have the stiffness of the rod. Well, the same thing. You get a mechanical advantage of the bones if the tendon is right smack on the bone, and those are called the pulleys. And a trigger situation is that there's swelling in the fishing line or in the loops. So the fishing line doesn't glide through the loops as easy. That's what a trigger finger is. But it's particularly a problem in a thumb because, as they say in Yiddish, afsaluchas, in the middle of the tendon, they put not one, but two little bones, like your kneecap is in the tendon in your knee. They put two little bones, they're called sesamoid bones, in the flexor tendon. And it's harder to fix that conservatively. But the good news is you still local anesthesia. Someone who's really capable as a hand surgeon can open it up under local anesthesia and release the pulley, and the tendon will glide. But I would only let a hand surgeon take a look at you. So at Cedars, there's David Culver and Eugene Tsai. There's some really good hand people. Give them a call. They can help you, Jeannie. As long as you act like an actress, you'll be just fine.
Just, can I ask you a question? I had seen my primary doctor, and she gave me antibiotics because she thought it might be infective.
Does it make any sense for you to tell me it's cold outside and I tell you to have I'm trying to think of a cockamamie explanation or something, but one thing has nothing to do with the other. If you have an infection, that's different, but you don't get a trigger thumb because of an infection.
All right.
You need see a hand surgeon.
What was the name? David Culver, and who was the other one?
Eugene Tsai, T-S-A-I. Both of them have been guests on the show. I love those guys.
Okay.
And Dr. Clapper sent you.
Yeah, no, I really shouldn't take any antibiotics and just make...
You're not in front of me. I don't know. You could have an infection. I doubt that's what it is, but if you have one, you need to be on antibiotics. Here's what you need to do. You need to go see one of those two guys.
Okay.
All right, young lady. Listen, I just did something nice for you, right? You're a total stranger.
I've listened to you ever since you started.
Okay. Well, then you need to find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
I will.
All right, young lady. Pleasure to talk to you. All right, let's keep going. I'll do the first segment. I'll do calls. Let's go to Manny in L.A. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, Dr. Clapper. Good morning. Happy Saturday.
You too, Manny. What do you do for a living?
I'm a server, so I've been working in a hotel for 10 years, hospitality. You know, there's front desk and all that, all the other jobs you can think of inside of a hotel, but I work in the cocktail lounge.
I did that. I worked in the Catskill Mountains. That's how I paid for college and medical school. I worked in all that stuff. Those people can drive you crazy, Manny.
I know, but we get a lot of great people in there, and that's the reason why I'm calling. About a few months ago in October, I broke my wrist in a bike accident, distal radius and my ulna.
Mm-hmm.
And that hand is my serving hand where I hold my tray.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in a cast. I had to have surgery over at USC in downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, they had to put a metal plate in there with a few screws.
Okay.
And I was in neutral in a cast for about 2 months. And after the cast came off, I had trouble moving it into what's called like a supination or pronation back
right.
and forth.
Supination and so, means your palm's up. Pronation means your palm is down.
Exactly. So it's like almost like learning how to walk again, but moving your arm. So
yes.
My question is, I'm having some issues with my ulna bone in the corner. It's almost like the styphoid.
Mm-hmm.
That little
yep.
corner.
Yep. Yep.
My question is, how long does something usually like that take to? I guess. Well, I know I had surgery, so it's going to be a lifelong thing. But maybe to get used to it, because I still get that pain every morning, like a sharp pain.
Listen, you know what, Manny? You work hard for a living. You need your hands to do things right. I can tell you it's going to take 18 months. I have no idea what I'm looking at because I don't have you in front of me or an x-ray. But you know what? It's important not just to hear that it's going to take time to get better. You deserve another opinion. Okay? You already had it taken care of. Those same two hand surgeons I just told you, go see them. Go see David Culber or Eugene Tsai or Stuart Kushner or Ryan Della Maggiore. Go see a hand surgeon. Someone that knows what they're doing, they give you some advice. And they'll say to you, you know what? Maybe Dr. Mink can even comment on this. That ulnar styloid is often neglected and missed when people break their wrists, right? It's a little bone. They don't pay attention to it. But you got to look for that bone because you could be like Manny and still have a problem with that bone, not the original fracture afterwards. Right, Dr. Mink?
It happens regularly, no question.
Yeah, so you need to have an evaluation, Manny. Do me a favor so that I can help you. Go this week, go get to see and get another. No offense to the first person who took care of you. I have a gut feeling, and I got a big gut. Just talked to my mother. I'm a sumo wrestler. I got a big gut. I have a gut feeling that you need a second opinion, okay?
Cool. Couple cool facts. Mother's Jewish on mother's side. Just want to let you know the tribe's representing the calls this morning. And lifelong Lakers fan, okay? So I know we're going to go all the way, and I'm hoping AD comes back after, you know, a little tailbone heals up.
I got one question for you, Manny, the Laker fan. Can we beat the damn Clippers?
You know, I think we could. I hope this Kuzma LeBron drama thing kind of boils down. I think it's just all media, but I think they're built to beat the Clippers, even though they say Clippers are built to beat the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to take LeBron needs to just cut back on those turnovers and just become LeBron James, like fourth quarter monster. Just take it to the hole. And I know his age is up there now, but with AD coming back, I think third time's a charm, Dr. Clapper.
Okay, well,
I'm using some Clapper vision.
You need some of that Jewishness in you to pray to the synagogue to get them to win this year, because that's what we're going to need.
I will. Thanks, Dr. Clapper.
All right, Manny, I want you to do me a favor. Get a second opinion, and at the same time today, find a total stranger, do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
Done, Dada. Have
okay.
a good day, guys.
All right, God bless you. All right, let's take a break. Coming back, I'm going to pick the mind of my guest today, the great Dr. Jerry Mink, because I want to talk about radiology techniques in art and in sports and what he thinks about this. Coming up next on the Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710.
Because it's your own stuff, but
that is unbelievable, Steve Paulette. God bless you. I love you. I love her too. Gloria Estefan. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. What a pleasure. You know, last week, I neglected to tell you where the best rice pudding. My mother, Chinese food, the leftovers. What do you do with all this rice? We didn't eat the rice. She would concoct a custard with milk and the rice, sugar, and put raisins and cinnamon. Put it in the refrigerator, and this conglomeration became the greatest dessert I ever had in my life. And I'm a chocoholic. I've been searching here in Los Angeles for Lillian Clapper's rice pudding. I don't want the brown raisins. I want those green raisins. They put the green raisins in. And the cinnamon, it comes from Saigon. That's the best cinnamon. Oh, my mouth is watering already. But it can't be thick. It can't be too much rice because then it's just thick. And it can't be too loose. It's got to be like a pillow with the feathers inside. That's the rice pudding I want with the cinnamon, the sugar, and the green raisins. And here in L.A., I'm happy to tell you, I found the greatest rice pudding. And last week I talked about it, but I didn't reveal the location. So today I'm telling you where it is. Jerry's Deli in Encino. Go there. If they have any left, buy them all. You better get there before I do because I'm going to buy them all. But that rice pudding from Jerry's Deli in Encino is the best damn rice pudding you're going to have. When you open, crack the top of it, take the lid off. Don't do one of the spoons for coffee. Do one of the spoons for having cereal and milk. The big spoon. Take a big spoonful and put that in your mouth. Close your eyes. Get ready. You're going to need a cup of coffee and a cigarette afterwards because that's how you're going to feel. It's an orgasmic dose of rice pudding. Jerry's Deli, Encino. And while you're there, you can go to Gelson's and get the sumo oranges. You can have a whole clapper meal there, right there, right in front of you. All right. Today, it's been just a joy to have someone I respect in his field, in radiology, the great Dr. Jerry Mink, talking about what it's like to see a two-dimensional film and reconstruct what your body is. So I thought about all week long, where do you see a radiologist's gift in art, in sports, that mimics that skill set? For me, it's Pete Dye. Pete Dye being able to, on a napkin, draw out one of the greatest golf holes in America, where it's an island green. Can you imagine? You're teeing off over a lake, and in the middle of the lake is the target. One false move, and the ball's in the water. He did this in Florida, Sawgrass, and he did it at La Quinta, where they're playing right now. If you go on the Golf Channel, you'll see the American Express tournament, and that 17th hole is a Pete Dye hole at La Quinta, where it's an island green. But Pete Dye, like Jerry Mink, starts with a two-dimensional drawing of something three-dimensional. Let's hear the soundbite together, Dr. Mink, and I want to hear what you think about this guy.
When former PGA Tour Commissioner Dean Beaman enlisted Pete Dye to design TPC Sawgrass's stadium course, the World Golf Hall of Fame architect went to work on a dinner placemat. That's right, the future home of the Players' Championship originally took shape with a sketch. With blueprint in hand, Dye built his masterpiece. Today, the stadium course stands as one of the world's premier venues. And it all began with the stroke of a pencil.
You would think he would do something three-dimensionally. He can do that on a table. But no, Jerry Mink, he goes two-dimensionally. Could you possibly tell me why there's an advantage to two-dimension thinking when you're dealing with something three-dimensionally?
Well, I think as a radiologist, you're always really thinking in three dimensions, and you're stuck with two dimensions for the most part. Now, we have the ability to make three-dimensional pictures, but I think most radiologists, they just have it. You know, you just have it or you don't. Architects do the same thing, right? They sketch out things on a napkin or a piece of paper, and then they build a model after that. But they already have the vision in their head. So I think it's just a gift that you have. I'm not sure you can learn that, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that you just have that ability or you don't.
Here's more from Pete Dye about how much passion plays a role in his appreciation of his gift.
I love building a golf course. You got to be crazy or something, but I love doing it.
40 years you're doing this, you've now got a sixth sense, right? When you started, you would have to look at that film and look at that film. All these years later, and hundreds of thousands of x-rays and CAT scans and MRIs you've read, how long does it take for you to go, I can already feel what's going on? Do you look at the corners of the film and work your way to the center? Do you go right to the center and then branch out?
Generally, I start in the center, but I don't know why that's an advantage or disadvantage. It's just the way I've been doing it for a long time. I think the most important thing is you got to make sure you look at the whole film, not just the focus of it. You know, let's say it's the knee cartilage, the meniscus. You have to make sure you look at everything because quite frequently the orthopedist will send a request in that says right knee MRI, rule out IDK. And IDK is internal derangement of the knee, but it also stands for I don't know. And while the orthopedist might think the problem is the meniscus, sometimes it's the bone, and sometimes it's, like I gave an example earlier, a guy with a bad hip, it was something in his pelvis that was totally unrelated. So radiologists develop a search pattern. And some from one side, some from the other side, from the center, from the periphery in. But you got to cover the whole film.
Okay.
Where 16 in green is located and 17 green, there was a big pocket of sand and it went deep. So we just kept digging it out. All of a sudden this big chasm was out there and there was no place for the green. The green was gone. My bride came by, Al said to me, well, why don't you just put an island green out there?
Pete Dye will go for a swim today.
That's Splash with Pete Dye.
Amazing that he learned a lesson of fighting. Stop fighting the anatomy. Stop fighting what you've been given. Men make plans and God laughs. And he just waves the towel and says, all right, there's no way I'm going to get this to work. It's just a bigger and bigger hole. It actually wasn't him who said stop fighting. It was his wife.
I'm not an architect. See, an architect, you have to have a degree in something. I couldn't finish grade school, high school, or college. You try to get as much variety as possible. And the man upstairs gave you a great piece of ground in the valley here that rolled up and down and had the river going through it. So it had a lot of natural aspects to it. When we got over to the fifth hole and saw a tunnel, we could work it out. And when you can walk through a natural tunnel to go into the next tee, that's... You can't find that any other place.
But it's his wife who helps him.
When a person plays the golf course, they remember those long views. And it has nothing to do with the playability of the golf course. It's the ambience around the golf course and inside the golf course that really makes it. I just was just here for a couple of years.
I think like here's 12. The bite where he thanks his wife.
Where 16 and green is located and 17 green. There was a big pocket of sand.
Yeah, we heard that already.
An artist is somebody who draws something. I've always just told people what I want and pray that they do it. And a lot of times when I tell them what to do, they do it a lot better than I ever thought and just leave it that way. So you never know. If you build a golf course, if it's then successful, that's the best thing. As long as in your profession... Somebody still mentioned your name and doesn't just put you in jail. You're okay.
I just love listening. It's like listening to you, Dr. Mink, but here's where his wife comes in.
The famous 17, dubbed Alcatraz, where Lee Trevino made his memorable hole-in-one in the 87 Skins game. This eye-catching island green, the design genius of Alice Dye.
Just look at it. Look at the water. Look at the natural grass around the rock. And that itty-bitty green in this great big lake and those gorgeous mountains behind it. You can't copy this. This is just perfect. If you're just a member playing and having fun, you're looking forward to this. But if you're a golf professional and trying to shoot a score, I think it's pretty scary.
She's the one. Do you ever find yourself fighting the diagnosis and then you just like relax and it just comes to you?
You know, you look at the film for a period of time and you see a little finding in the cartilage and maybe you see a little something in one of the ligaments and then you get the whole picture.
It sometimes comes piecemeal. It doesn't necessarily come to you.
Sometimes you put up the film and bang, it's just there.
Wow.
And you see the whole thing. It depends on the case. You know, some cases are complicated, and you sit there and scratch your head for 15 minutes and try to get it all put together. Radiologists, all doctors, like to have one unifying diagnosis. They don't want to say that there's five different – there's a cancer and a heart disease. And you like to have one unifying diagnosis. And sometimes you put up the film and bang, it just hits you in the face, the whole thing, and you know right away. And then you sort out the pieces. Other times you start with the pieces and draw the whole picture.
In the world of art, the example that I'm going to use is of the Leaning Tower of Pisa, a three-dimensional structure that fell apart because they didn't pay attention enough to their drawings. Here you see the tower, which is a normal bell tower, except that it's leaning because what it is a faultiness to the base. The marshland is allowing it to tilt. In radiology, you will see the bone is fine. It's just the joint below it is disintegrating, causing the malalignment. It's almost like painting wind. You can't paint wind. It's invisible. But you can paint the effect on the trees. You can paint the effect of it. So oftentimes, they may be coming to you where it's my tibia, it's my metacarpal, my metatarsal. That's where the problem is. But you're going to be looking at the joint above and the joint below because the pathology actually may be coming from another place. It may be coming from the foundation and not the bone itself. It's from the marshland and not the bell tower itself.
As you know, people who have a bad knee, they often complain of hip pain. Right. And they may develop a bit of a scoliosis to compensate for what's going on in their hip and their knee. So, again, you have to look at the whole picture. You can't just look at the knee, that's the problem. It may be a problem, but it's got, you know, downwater consequences.
What a joy it is to be able to do something for so many years and it still be interesting each day you go to work.
I love it. I work because I really enjoy what I do. And radiology has so radically changed. As I said earlier, when I started in radiology in the 70s, there was no ultrasound, there was no CAT scan, there was no MRI scan. It was just plain x-rays. And I've had to reinvent myself multiple times over. But it's exciting, and I like the challenge of learning something new and trying to be good at it.
You sound exactly like...
I love Bill Nenigal, of course.
Bill Dye.
You got
Pete
Dye.
Pete
Dye. Sorry. I love doing it.
I love doing it. That's you. All right, we'll take a break. Coming up next, I'll take your calls, and I want to talk a little bit about the Leaning Tower of Pisa and see what the mind of Jerry Mink says. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. The Eagles, your lion eyes. You need your eyes to be a radiologist, that's for sure. The ability to see the X, Y, but the Z axis, depth, three-dimensional. 1,000 years ago, in northern Italy, they built, next to the church, a bell tower in a little town called Pisa. This structure, solid marble, because the mountains of Carrara are right there where I go to sculpt, the stone that Michelangelo used to make the David. You can go on my website and see the sculptures that I make. God, the Getty's going to have an exhibition of Michelangelo's drawings next month. I can't wait to go. I'm getting to go the day before to see the exhibit. And I think I'm going to give my lecture again called Michelangelo's Sculptures, How He Manipulated Anatomy. If the Getty actually lets me give, I gave it in 2011. If they have me come back, so many people registered for the talk, they had to turn them away. They had 1,000 people in this audience. It was great. But if I give it again, I'll let you guys know. But in that area, they built this bell tower. What they didn't realize is they didn't do their homework. You can't build a 14,000-ton marble structure in marshy, swampy land because it's an unstable foundation. The two-dimensional architects did not appreciate the three-dimensional anatomy. They built a beautiful tower, but they built the first three floors and it started to tilt. God bless the Italians. They kept building. The Leaning Tower of Pisa. Okay, for 1,000 years it was doing just fine. Somehow stabilized. A miracle. But in 1990, it got scary because it started to tilt further. And if it tilts beyond 5.44 degrees, it's going to tumble. They tried over the years to pour concrete, to put cables, and all they did was make the problem worse. Until someone did something that we do in orthopedic surgery, which is to correct your bunion, to correct your crooked knee, either bow-legged or knock-kneed, you remove a wedge from the bone. When you remove a wedge, a triangular-shaped wedge, looks like a doorstop, you now straighten it out. And ultimately, that's what they did to fix the problem. They dug under the marsh and removed a wedge of the sand and straightened the Leaning Tower of Pisa. They didn't fix it all the way, but they got it back to the way it was 1,000 years ago. Listen to the story of the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Most of the terrain in Pisa is essentially a former bog, a former swamp, and the subsoil in Pisa is extremely shifty and delicate, and it does not withstand heavy loads.
The 57-meter-tall tower sits on supports that are only 3 meters deep.
Wow.
And surrounded by soggy ground.
Can you imagine?
Nowhere near strong or stable enough for a 14,500-ton pile of stone.
It's like building a tall tower on a sponge. It can only go so high before it's going to start leaning. In fact, it's a miracle it never collapsed.
When you see anatomy, Jerry Mink, and you see a structure that's beautiful and perfect and sound, but if it's up against a joint where the cartilage is breaking down, a fracture occurred, and things collapse, that beautiful bone has to live with that marshy, boggy foundation, and the good bone fails because of the joint above or below it. Correct?
Correct, but somehow or another, most of us have joints that wear out, and somehow we make it.
We compensate.
You know, luckily, it doesn't always mean that you're going to have a severe problem.
Yeah, the body, the miracle occurs.
Most of the attempts have failed, and those who most wanted to save the tower are really those who almost contributed to toppling it over. One of the most brutal interventions in the tower was conducted by Mussolini, and that intervention was about as brutal as fascist politics. He had the idea of boring 361 holes in the foundation and pumping it with 90 tons of cement. Mussolini also owned the cement factory, Trippi said. The tower began to sway slightly out of control, but it's always managed to stabilize itself.
The last thing you want to put into a boggy swamp is cement. It makes it a bigger problem, dummy. But when you own the cement company, you got a conflict of interest. Many doctors have a conflict of interest, Dr. Mink.
Now, lots of ancient buildings, they do lean. But the Leaning Tower of Pisa just looks like it's defying the law of physics. And that's all to do with its center of mass, which is just about here.
Experts calculate the tower's center of mass is around the fourth floor. As long as this sits above the base of the building, it will stand. But if it moves outside of that area, you have a disaster.
5.44 degrees.
Calculations show that when the tower was at a lean of about 5.44 degrees, it should have collapsed. Now, by 1990, it was already at 5.5. It should have gone down. No one knows why it didn't collapse.
Jerry Mink, I want to talk about breaks in the bone, fractures of the bone, when I play this next soundbite. Osteoporosis means the mineral has left the bone. People get compression fractures in their spine. People will break their bone without a fall even. The bone will break first. The cortical bone, the outside of the bone, the cortex, is key. But so is the marrow. When they talk about the Leaning Tower of Pisa, as it's tilting, one of the things that gets the stress is the wall itself, the cortical bone. Remember, the bell tower is hollow like our bones are hollow, but the cortex, is the wall of the bone.
There are other dangers as well, one of which is the incredible amount of stress which is produced on certain areas of the tower due to the weight of the tower.
The tilt strains the walls, which can be devastating to a structure built from solid stone. But while these look solid, the walls are filled with a random mix of building materials, making them less sturdy.
There has been a great concern that the tower would rather burst and implode rather than topple over.
Not only could the tower have fallen, it could have exploded at any point. It defies belief that it's still standing.
Jerry Mink, Dr. Mink, when you see a fracture in a bone, do you often look for, was there an old screw hole? Was there a nutrient artery? What we call a stress riser, that the nidus or the origination of the fracture, you look for that, don't you?
MR has given us a new look at bones because we can see the pre-fracture events. There's these microfractures that occur. As a matter of fact, it's been pretty well understood by everybody that old people fall down and break their hip.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. But sometimes you look back at an old MRI and you see that they had some stress riser. They had these microfractures, and they're walking along and they complete the fracture and then they fall down.
Spontaneous.
So it wasn't the fall that always broke things. But with MRI, we see these microfractures that occur in osteoporotic people, that is people who have too little bone, or people that have taken cortisone for long periods of time. They have too little bone often. But we also see these microfractures in athletes or stress fractures, people who are just trying to do too much. But great athletes have stress fractures, people that are in great shape. So it isn't just someone trying to do too much.
The great Dr. Jerry Mink joining me today. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Close out the show. What a pleasure. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on ESPN LA 710. Ooh, the operator. That's right, Steve Paulette. I'm a surgeon. I want to be a smooth operator. Happy birthday, Sade. This is the music I play yesterday. Six cases. Two hip replacements, four knee replacements. You know what I'm listening to for the first case, which was tough? Eric Clapton. What's the second case? George Michael. Gloria Estefan. Steely Dan. But the last case of the day, the vibe in the room, I'm listening to her. She lets me know the day is beautifully coming to an end. Love her. Wow. Next week, I want to talk about shoes. A family-owned company, York Athletics. They make the greatest shoes. Since 1946, this family's making sneakers and shoes in America. And I want to talk about the Corvette. Heritage Classic Cars. Robertson, Santa Monica, and West Hollywood. On my way to work this week, to see patients, not to go to the operating room. I decided it's 6 o'clock in the morning. No one will be around. I pull my Corvette up to the front of the windows of Heritage Classic Cars so that I could look through the window. And there it is, a 1953 Corvette and a 1964 Corvette through the window. Made in America. That's what I want to talk about next week. The geniuses behind the Corvette. And I'll tell you then, I'll tell you a story next week of why I have a white Corvette. And it has everything to do with Johnny Carson. That'll be the story next week. Until then, get those sumo oranges. Get that rice pudding from Jerry's Deli. And find a total stranger. Do something nice for them. I want to thank Dr. Jerry Mink for letting me kidnap him this whole morning. Eat at the pantry. What a pleasure. I think I'm going surfing tomorrow. It's going to be a nice little swell. Too bad the water's going to be as cold as those ice cubes in the freezer. My voice may get a little bit higher because something happens to your testicles when you're in that water so cold. But until then, I'm going to leave you with Volare. which means I'm singing and I'm flying, which you and I do each and every Saturday. And thanks for telling your friends. Until then, I'll see you on the radio.